Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Let the truth
set you free.
You can't handle the truth.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
No. I am the father.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
What is that?
Hasta la vista, baby.
Hello and welcome back to the Creative Control Movie Podcast. I'm your host, Kenan, and thank you for joining us our latest episode, episode 62. Joining me today, my usual left and right hand mans, we've got Neil and Sasha. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Thank you for joining us as always. I think we are the Holy Trinity of this podcast, no doubt, and with special guests. But yeah, no, appreciate you guys as always. Right, so we are going retro once again. We are going back to the 80s. If you haven't explored this segment of the podcast previously, we're going back in time to look at the films of the 80s and 90s. But a lot of the time we get top 10 films of the 80s or the 90s per decade. And we just feel some films don't get a lot of love. And so we wanted to go back and do top 10 films of each year. And we started off with 1980, so we've done 1980 and 1981. Today we are here to talk the top 10 movies of 1982. Like I said, if you haven't checked those previous episodes, go back and you'll find some gems in there. There's a lot of films that these guys loved, which I didn't really know about. Blowout is still on my list. I think it is from the last one to watch. And researching this episode, I realized actually there is a huge number of movies released in 1982, which were good quality. You know, you could easily make a top 20 list. It was quite crazy, actually, and a really strong year at cinema. And obviously, we're going to go into that and, into detail. So our usual format when we do these top 10s is a collaborative list. So what we're going to do is there's three of us today. So we're each going to go around and give a nomination until we get 9 movies. We'll have one spot left. And then we're going to go to our team on our Creative Control WhatsApp group. And they've all put their pitches. And then we're going to select one film from those lists that have been given by Amrita, Lee, and who else has given a list on
there? Alex.
Yeah, I don't know if Andreas did or not. I don't think so. Okay. But yeah. That's how it works. But just before we start with our list, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening as always. If you are watching, you are on YouTube. So please make sure you hit that like and subscribe. Much appreciated. You might also be watching the video version of this on Spotify. So just make sure you hit that follow button on Spotify and you'll be notified every Sunday when a new episode lands. We are weekly now. And if you're listening on a podcast platform, thank you very much. Please make sure you like, share, subscribe, whatever platform you're using. It's much appreciated. Right, guys, 1982, and one thing I will touch on again, but just before we go into the list, is to clarify our release year. So the data available for the UK, which is where we're based, is pretty abysmal when it comes to box office numbers. There just isn't as much detail as compared to the US American box office. So what we've done is we've tied the movie releases into the calendar year of the USA box office. So it'd be from January to December release within the United States. Because obviously back in the 80s, there used to be much bigger windows between films releasing in different countries. So if you're saying, no, that film wasn't released in this year or that year, that is why. So I've done my homework. I should be correct. But if I'm not, please sound off in the comments and let me know. I also need to be educated. Right.
We're going to go for that top 10. Shut the up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But I'm a nice guy. What can I say? Exactly. Shut your mouth and know your role. Okay, let's start off. You know what? I'm going to start off first this time because I think this is an easy one. I think it's on everyone's top 10 list. If it's not on both of yours, I'd be absolutely shocked. It is the biggest grossing box office movie of that year. It is E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Directed by, in my opinion, the GOAT, Steven Spielberg. It was just a family fun movie. It had everything you wanted in it. Sci-fi, mystery, adventure. It's just stood the test of time. You know, it just carried a wonderful message of friendship and, the relationships between family. And also the fact that, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover kind of thing. You know, maybe an alien, but he's pretty cool too. And it's just looking out for other people, looking after those more vulnerable from yourself. There's just different messages throughout that movie. And It's one of Spielberg's favorites, I know, and it's one that he, you know, often watches back and he wouldn't change a thing. He did change one thing for a re-release where he changed the guns the guns that they were holding, the agents, into walkie-talkies. And retrospectively now, he wished he hadn't gone and done that. He said, no, film shouldn't be touched depending on the day and age that it is now. So that is the only regret. But other than that, he wouldn't change anything, which I think speaks volumes. And I wouldn't change a thing about this movie either. It's generation to generation. Everybody knows it. Just fantastic. Any thoughts on E.T., guys?
Yeah, it's number six on my list. Number six. There are other films that I gravitate towards. E.T. is one that I visit very rarely, you know, mm-hmm. very, very rarely. It was one of the first films I ever watched as a kid, though. But, you know, when the two cassette tapes I had back then was E.T. and Knight Rider. Sorry, right. E.T., but Michael Knight got that. every time. Okay, Knight Rider was the thing. Okay, but as for E.T., comes up in conversation a lot in my friend circle, like especially in my pub friend circle, because my good friend Adrian Redhead, who's a 47-year-old man, he's afraid of that. He's afraid of E.T.
You keep posting stuff on Facebook to him. You're cruel.
Of E.T.
He's afraid of E.T. Is that why
people are of snakes and spiders? That's why I keep posting E.T. about it. Yeah, that's why he keeps posting E.T. and tagging him. He's cruel, man. He's cruel.
It's not just me. It's like a whole group of people. doing it, man.
This is what Sasha does to his friends. Who knows what he does to his enemies?
Come on, man. Adrian is, he kind of looks like Wesley Snipes. He was the guy we were trying to get for your Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's quite built. He's a brick shit house and he's afraid of E.T., the extraterrestrial. So not quite that hard. Adrian, love you, man. But I'm going to pimp this podcast just out for you to let you know that I've let the world know about your fear of E.T., the extraterrestrial. You should grow up and watch the film.
Adrian, yeah, I've never met you, sir, but you're going to wind up at work and somebody's going to dash an E.T. at you. And you're just, when it happens, you're just going to look back and the first flash in your mind is going to be a picture of Sash like this.
Neil, what's your thoughts on E.T.?
It's weird because I feel like when people say, oh, this is a classic film, I think the word gets overused, but I think E.T. actually is a classic film. Cause I'm like, I'm trying to think, when was the last time I watched E.T.? And I'm positive, absolutely positive, the last time I watched E.T. was prior to 2002.
Wow. Okay. So that was a long time ago,
but I remember it like I watched it last week.
It's one of those that really sticks with you, and you can pretty much remember most of the scenes, you know. It's got such a familiarity about it. Like you say, you don't even need to have watched it a bunch of times, but maybe that's because obviously E.T. the character has also been around, and you know, he's sold BT and all sorts of stuff over the years. But it's a character that stays with.
Wasn't he a Christmas ad?
I think it was a Christmas. Only in the last couple of years they brought him back.
In the last 5 years, 6 years, he was a Christmas ad.
They started doing that with the old films because they bought Macaulay Culkin back to do some Home Alone stuff, and then they brought E.T. bringing back these old characters. Alf is selling phones or broadband now for Ryan Reynolds or something. So kind of crazy times. That's my pick. That's number one. Neil, we'll go over to you. What is your first pick for the top 10?
All right.
I think I know what it is, but we'll see.
I mean, there's only really and truly one film that it can be. It's nothing bad I can say about this film. It's Conan the Barbarian.
Yes, that's the one I was
going to be Conan the Barbarian. It has to be that movie. It's like, I know the world we live in right now in 2023. I know the world, I know society and that, but that movie defined masculinity when he was born in the 1980s, right? Mm-hmm. He was born like 1979, 1980 upwards, right? That defined masculinity. Just crush your enemies, just raw see the power before you, and hit a lamentation of the women.
I mean, for a long time, he's like, you know, the thing is, it wasn't, I mean, was it an 18 when it came out?
Or I think it was because
it was quite a violent movie, right? So, so look, for those of you who don't know Conan the Barbarian, I'm sure you do, but we're not talking about the Jason Momoa one. Okay. It's Conan the Barbarian. It earned about $79 million at the worldwide box office. However, home video sales took this to over 300 million. It was huge on VHS afterwards. It very much became a cult classic. It introduced us to the world of Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's an epic sword fighting fantasy adventure. The character, I remember in the trailers, it was, there we go. That's popping up on the screen now. Funko Pop, Conan the Barbarian. And Neil and I went to a Comic-Con together not so long ago. And we both bought a sword each from a guy there selling replica swords. And I know Neil, he's showing it on screen now. So if you're watching the video podcast, the Conan the Barbarian sword, a thing of beauty, absolute thing of beauty.
Yeah, my finger.
Yeah, I actually went for the Thundercat sword. So I've got the Thundera. But that's still in its box because I've got nowhere to put it at the moment. So, I knew Neil was a huge fan of this. But I remember the trailer, you know, it was gritty. It was like slave, barbarian, warrior, thief, gladiator, conqueror. And it tells a story of this barbarian warrior named Conan, who seeks vengeance for the death of his parents at the hands of, is it Thusla?
Thulsa Doom.
Thulsa Doom, who's played by James Earl Jones, a very young James Earl Jones, the leader of the snake cult. It's quite funny that actually, this is obviously one of Arnold's big breaks. And he really, I think he's been up to 18 months preparing for this role, like physically, but also with like vocal coaches and stuff like that. Yeah. His first line of dialogue doesn't come until like 24 minutes into the film. And he was actually supposed to narrate the film as well. But because of the strength of the accent, they actually got somebody else to do that for a different character. Michael. But Neil, any other comments you want to make on Conan the Barbarian before we move over to Sash and get his thoughts on it?
I think Conan the Barbarian, to point blank period, right? If you love 300, if you love... I'm not going to say if you love like Gladiator or if you love like Spartacus or anything like that, but definitely
Spartacus TV show.
Yes, not the film, which one came before.
Yeah.
But if you love like that sword and sandal and sorcery, like a barbarian handling business,
mm-hmm.
there will never, never be a better film than Conan the Barbarian. That 1980, there'll never be a better film.
What did you think of the sequel? Just asking.
Conan, I mean, you can see that they boiling on a budget is mm-hmm. the phrase. they couldn't replicate that magic. But I'm going to try not to get into it too deeply. But
mm-hmm.
the thing is, in the 1980s and in the 1990s, and I think also in the 1970s, there was just moments in time where the right people were in the right place at the right time and magic happened. Yes, obviously, Star Wars. Obviously, I'm not going to say it, but there are other films in this list that were just literally just right moment, right time. Thing, you know, Alien, right moment, right time.
Yeah.
And Conan the Barbarian is absolutely right moment, right time. Just because everything that went wrong made the film better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, agreed. If you go back and actually watch some of the making of behind the scenes, there's some dogs in the film which were like savage, and they're actually really savage on set, and you can see like Schwarzenegger's fear of the dogs like whilst filming, and apparently they attacked their handlers and all sorts. It was a tough production. Sasha, Conan the Barbarian, was it in your list?
Yeah, it was. It was number four, in fact. But yeah, definitely a good pick. Cinematic classic. If you heard the previous Creative Control about Legend of Zelda, I was like, well, maybe that would be one route to approach the Link character. Have him not speak. It's a bold mm-hmm. choice. But then that comes from Linus, whatever. That crazy guy's masterstroke in directing there, man. Because he was a G. He was a genius, absolute genius. And a force to be reckoned with in Hollywood. I know he's in ill health right now, so it'd be impossible to get him back for King Conan. But I'm like, if he had stuck with the series, would have been gold. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We might even still be talking about the Hot Wrestler series now if they kept him on. But, you know, they didn't. They went down the money machine route, and, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, some of the... I can't even remember the sequels, but that first one with James Earl Jones, mm-hmm. sick.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's Conan the Barbarian. That takes a spot on our top 10 list. Sasha, coming over to you now. What is your first pick for the top 10?
Rocky III.
Nice.
I'm not surprised that it's in the list. I'm surprised it's the first film that you named in the list.
Dude, really? No.
Is that your number one?
That's my number one. Because out of all the films from this specific year, when I look at it, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, there are films that I think are better, for sure. Mm-hmm. However, it's not the one I watch the most, okay? Mm-hmm. If I'm picking mm-hmm. one that I gravitated to the most, it's this one and the number two on my list. They're like the rewatch.
I'm pretty sure I know what your number two is.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I think I expect the number two to be number one.
I think my number two might surprise you guys. I think my number two is probably my number three.
Okay.
The one you guys have got in mind might be... We'll get to it. But anyway.
We'll get to it. I mean, look, Rocky III, Mr. T, breakout role, and really the first villain of the Rocky franchise, right? Because Apollo was never really a villain, but it's like they made this like, this is the bad guy. You do not like this guy. And obviously, spoilers, you know, his trainer Mickey dies, and there's a very powerful scene and stuff like that. But it was a different tone to the first two movies. I know from a critic's point of view, it was a little bit indifferent compared to the first two because the screenplay maybe wasn't as strong, but it was a lot more about the fighting. It was a lot more about the spectacle. It was a little bit more, I was more about the montages and, you know, the music and stuff like that in that film. Yeah. So. Yeah, for sure. So, Sash, what's some of the reason that it ranks so highly on your list then?
It's the most watched film out of all of these films of 1983, to be quite mm-hmm. honest. That as well as, come on, man, who doesn't love a bit of Rocky Balboa going toe-to-toe mm-hmm. against Mr. T, touching up his hair in the ring? You ain't bad. Not all bad.
And had Hulk Hogan in this one as well, at the beginning, right?
You have Hogan in it. You have Eye of the Tiger in it. You got everything in it, man. You have Apollo's redemption in it, because before mm-hmm. everything, you're like, oh, him, that guy, again, hush your mouth. And like, no, this one, it's the dream team. It's one of the first swings where it's like, oh, my God, he's joining forces with fucking the bad guy. You know, a trope forever synonymous in films these days. But you know what? Like back then, it was the OG. You know what I mean? It's the OG. You know what I mean?
You know, Rocky films, I don't know if it's just us obviously growing up on them, but I would, you know, they're pretty much going to make every top 10 list for whatever film, whichever year that they were released. Maybe Rocky V might not make it. I have to check what other films came out that year. But yeah, you know, Rocky 1-4, it'll make those lists. Neil, anything to add to Rocky 3?
It's my favorite Rocky, my personal favorite Rocky is Rocky 3. I know how you boys love Rocky 4. But Rocky 3 is my personal favorite. It's like, as a child watching it, obviously I loved Rocky. I loved everything that Rocky was about. Mm-hmm. As a grown man, when I like got started to go to the grown man. I was like late teens, starting to go to the gym, starting to work out. I was like, yeah, Clubber Lang, he had it right. And the thing is, I was like, it's very difficult to use the word badass and mean it. And it's like, when you watch Rocky III, and I implore anyone who thinks I'm lying, watch Rocky III and then just watch all the scenes with Mr. T, with Clubber Lang, right? When he pulverizes his opponents and he's looking at Mickey in the crowd and he's like, you tell him I'm coming, you tell him. And then you watch that film and then you tell me that most of these MMA fighters, most boxers nowadays, hell, most professional wrestlers nowadays, you tell me that the villains don't have Clubber Lang in them. The people who you say, oh, that one's the villain of this fight, that they ain't got that Clubber Lang in them. And it's like, some of the lines in that film, they get used today in 2023. What it is like, after I crucify him, you next.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember the imagery in that was really powerful, because I still remember like the fierce shots of the like Rocky point of view looking at Clubber Lang like coming towards the screen, like with punches and the snarling and the facial expressions were just immense. So he was a physical specimen in that movie.
Nah, you know what the
both of them were?
It's when they're fighting. It's when Rocky's dodging punches, and all you can hear is the whoosh, whoosh. And I was just like,
it was okay. Just too much. So Rocky III firmly cemented in our top 10. Right, I'm going to go to my second film of choice. There's a few to go, but I'm going to go with... I think there are better films. And I think that... no, I'm going to go with this one. I was going to go for another, but I'm going to make it my third pick. So my second pick is going to be The Thing. So... Yes. John Carpenter's The Thing, directed by John Carpenter. Obviously, he died on Halloween prior to that. Big Trouble in Little China after this. But yeah, featuring Kurt Russell, it's a horror sci-fi spectacle. It's not in size and special effects, but the way it's grounded and gritty. And, you know, it has a real horror element to this. And actually made our top 10 horror movies of all time. On our previous podcast. Right. And spoilers, it's basically a research team in Antarctica is hunted by something. Actually, I'm not going to go into spoilers, because if you haven't seen The Thing, not knowing is part of the fun. So I would say...
The movie is older than I am. If anyone is listening...
I know, but the point of this podcast is to introduce some audiences to movies they haven't seen, right? So I'm like, do I want to really give it away? But actually... people today, they don't really care about spoilers that much, do they? Anyway, it's haunted. They're being hunted by a shape-shifting alien. Okay, so there it is. That's what it is. And he can assume the appearance of his victim, so it keeps throwing you off, keeps you in suspense. The gore in it, the action, the suspense, it's just a must-see. So try to remake it, didn't work the same way. And yeah, it's a classic. Now it's less than $14 million at the box office. Didn't do much at the box office at all. Like I said, it was a tough year, but definitely a cult classic, definitely appreciated afterwards on VHS and later with DVD, and absolutely a cult classic. So that's up there for me, so The Thing. Sasha, thoughts on The Thing?
Probably one of my best John Carpenter movies ever made. So good. So good. Genuine horror. Always makes me jump. Kurt Russell is just too damn cool, but then it's Kurt Russell, so you know what I mean. It's hard not to be cool if you're Kurt Russell in this movie. MacReady with his flamethrower, right, this one, Neil. Made my number.
Oh, sorry, Sasha, go on.
Yeah, this was my number five.
Number five on your list, right? Okay. Neil, you're number two. I thought it was going to be up there for you, obviously being a horror fan. So why is it number two for you?
I mean, all right, as has been documented, I am not a fan of The Shining. I do not like the film. I have never liked the film. Everything I dislike about The Shining, I love about The Thing. It is tense. It is truly, like, scary and horrific. In there, there's a real level of isolation. Like, obviously, okay, they have similarities. They're both in a snowy backdrop of sorts. They're both about people who are isolated, cut off from the rest of the world, so to speak. Yeah. But it's like, with The Thing, you have people who find out something is wrong and actively start investigating it. And, you know, you've got Kurt Russell, who is like just, as Sasha said, he's just cool in it.
Cool you've AF. Got yeah.
Keith David, who's just one bad mother. Right? And the thing is, what I like about the film is, well, what I like about the film now, as opposed to when I first watched it, is that it's very difficult to make a film when you have a very small number of characters and nobody really does anything stupid.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Like, when you look at it and you can, like, okay, everyone is making a decision, which in some way is logical. It's a logical decision. Yeah. It might not be the best decision, but it's a logical decision. Everyone makes logical decisions in that film. And I'm like, yep. With the information you had, you made a logical decision. It either went good for you or it didn't go good for you. And also, the fact that the movie ends, this film was made in 1982. I was born in 1984. And my entire lifespan, this movie has had a question at the end of the film that nobody, barring John Carpenter, knows the answer to. And I was like, I'm going to be nice. For those who haven't seen the film, I'm not going to tell you what the question is. For those of you who have seen the film, you know what the question is. And for years, I thought I knew what the answer to this question was based off of two particular things. John Carpenter was like, nope, you don't know what the answer is.
Love it. Keeping suspense for like 40 years.
Oh, also, it probably has what I would consider to be the second greatest jump scare in all of, I'm going to say in all of sci-fi horror, but easily top five jump scares in all horror.
High praise with this film. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's The Thing. Makes our list. Neil, what's your next pick?
See, now, I have four films in here, which I'm dubious about whether they'll make it. Certain others, I'm like, yeah, that'll make it. You're like, I can rely on Sash for that one. I can rely on you for that one. So I'm going to pick one that I'm like, I can't rely on you boys for this one.
Okay.
And I'm going to pick Poltergeist.
Yeah, it didn't make my list.
I'll pick Poltergeist.
Okay, why is that?
I just think Poltergeist is a it's not going to make sense when I say it, but it will make it better. It makes sense. It's a good family oriented, it's a good family horror film.
Because there's a family in it, or for the family to watch?
No, it's a family horror film because it's not so scary. Like, you could sit down and watch the original Poltergeist, you could sit down and watch it with your whole family, with your double numbered children, you know, as long as they're in double numbers, it should be okay, right? As long as you got kids in double numbers, so if you got one kid is 10, one kid is 13, the whole family can sit down and watch Poltergeist and be like, okay, cool. That's, you know, it's a bit scary, but it's not, oh my gosh, I'm never going to sleep again scary.
Mm-hmm.
But even with that, it manages to maintain a level of fear. And, you know, it's like, it's just when you, you know, when I kept saying about like lightning in a bottle, people just captured magic. And I'm like, Steven Spielberg, there was a rumor, there's a persistent rumor that Steven Spielberg ghost directed this movie.
Wasn't he involved in the writing of it?
Yes. He produced it as well. Right. I'm like, this movie is probably better than the majority of, like, there's a majority of horror films that get a lot more praise, a lot more pushed out, and they're just not as good. I mean, I'm looking it up. So Toby Hooper directed this. Toby Hooper directed Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So already you've got one big boy with horror. Steven Spielberg, the GOAT. Like, anybody who doesn't really, anybody, if you don't think Steven Spielberg is the GOAT, then I respectfully call you a jackass. Because there will never be another film director with that track record of what he's, of films that he helped write, films that he helped produce, films that he directed himself. No one will ever have that, right? Doesn't matter how good you think they are. Doesn't matter how... Stanley Kubrick, yeah, no. Quentin Tarantino, I love you. Mwah, no. Doesn't matter who he is. No one will reach that pinnacle. That Steven Spielberg, the guy.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and even when you look at, like, I'm trying to look at it, and the only bad thing about Poltergeist is it doesn't have the creepy old man in it. There's a creepy old man who's in Poltergeist 2 and 3. He's not in the first one.
Ah, okay. I know that Steven Spielberg tried to get Stephen King involved in the writing of this originally, but King later said that he was on like a ship across the Atlantic and he didn't get a message until much later.
Yeah.
But yeah, since then it's very much come out that it was more of a collaboration rather than just being directed by Hooper. So yeah, and yeah, Spielberg was very much involved in this, you know, writing, producing, but on the days, I think he was there and like helping with the direction. But because he was doing E.T., he wasn't available full time. So
yeah. But that's the thing. He literally, so there was three screenwriters involved in the writing of the script, but the story, Spielberg.
Spielberg. Yeah. Sasha, Poltergeist, was it on your list?
Never seen it.
Ah, right. Okay. There you go.
Never seen it. Never really, you know what I mean? It's horror genre. Never really piqued my interest. I heard of it. I actually didn't know Spielberg was behind it. I was like, okay, fair enough. Kids horror. All right. Maybe I could deal with that. But just not, you know, never really interest me.
All right. Fair enough.
Now I know what Ralph Wiggum felt like when Lisa cussed him out that one time.
I can actually see the moment when Neil's heart broke. Okay, Sasha, what is your next pick?
What number are we on? Number two.
So this will be your second pick, yeah.
My second pick? First Blood, mate.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my number two film for you.
Yeah.
So was that what you were thinking? Was that what you were thinking?
I thought that was your number two. That's why I had your number two.
I thought first one would have been your number three.
You think my third one? Okay. When I say the third one, you'll be like, yeah, that's it. If it's not the thing you think it is, then okay, I don't know what to say. But First Blood. Come on, man. The first time we see Rambo. I noticed that I never came into this list thinking it would be a double Sylvester Stallone fest. to be honest.
Sylvester Fest.
And it's like two of his greatest, man. But yeah, First Blood, the first Rambo movie, sheer masterpiece. You know what really makes this film though? The end. The end monologue really brings it home because like it's more than your standard action movie. Yeah, it's got action in it, but it's about a Vietnam vet dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome, you know, getting triggered, being treated like shit by his country and the people in it, etc. Yeah, like that speech at the end.
Breaking point.
Yeah, that meltdown at the end, that's fantastic. And you know what? If you've seen the alternative ending, in the book and in the original ending for the film was he leaves in a body bag. Troutman actually shoots him and kills him. Yeah. So he leaves in a body bag. And, you know, the test screen audience saved Rambo from that fate because they hated that ending because they'd just been on this journey with this guy. It was bad enough that you felt sorry for him at the end. And you know what I think it is? I think it's that monologue that saved the character, to be quite honest, because beforehand, sure, you felt sorry for him, etc., but that really brought home the stuff he was dealing with, and that was all Stallone. Mm-hmm. It was very this was a troubled production when they filmed it. The director, Rambo had loads of one-liners and stuff, and Stallone saw something in it where he was like, okay, cut the one-liners, and kind of like took charge. That monologue was improvised by him.
He actually has a writing credit on it.
He changed a lot of script.
He changed a lot. He
wrote the screenplay, from the book, because obviously it's based on a book. And then
I don't think he was the original writer, though. I think that happened
even like the fourth or fifth writer to jump in.
That's right. Mm. But a lot of the changes and a lot of things that make that movie great is a testament to Stallone's ability to write, write film decently, and seeing something within this character to make it more than what they were trying to do, to be quite honest, that last monologue is Oscar worthy. That is Oscar worthy. That is definitely worthy of an Oscar. And he didn't get it because it's like, by that point it was just Stallone fever, but he should have got nominated. In contrast to Rocky, very different character, completely different transformation. A different psyche, everything. So when people are like, oh, Stallone can't act, I'm like, have you not seen First Blood? Mm-hmm. You clearly have this is the thing. Whenever you show someone First Blood, like before, someone's stereotypical preconceptions of First Blood is always the sequels, always like number two or number three. And don't get me wrong, they're cool action movies. And I love the first four Rambo movies, like, to death. Like, if three was over the top, etc., it's that 80s cheese that I love, kind of thing. However, the third film is so far removed from what the first film is. At least the second one, you still got a bit of that drama in there and stuff, especially at the end when he has the monologue with the colonel, kind of thing. But it's nowhere near as in depth as what this one was. This one, my God, man, this is more or less like a low budget film. Like when I say that, I mean like an indie film or something. And I think a lot of people, if they haven't seen First Blood or if they haven't seen Rambo, forget that, because I know a lot of people actually haven't seen it. Forget about what you think it is. Just watch First Blood.
Agreed.
You'll change your mind, man, completely, and you'll be in. You'll be invested in the whole series. But like I say, 1-4, man, 1-4.
I never saw it.
It was okay, but I didn't think it was needed, and I think they could have given him a better send off than the one they gave him. But this film's phenomenal.
Mm.
Cool. Good stuff. Okay, so we'll move on. So we've got six films now. So just a quick reminder, we have E.T., we have Rocky, First Blood, Conan the Barbarian, The Thing, and Poltergeist. Neil, go on.
Yeah, I was going to say, right? I actually read First Blood this year.
Oh, right. Okay. And did you enjoy the novel?
The Rambo who is in that book? Fuck that guy. Right?
Wow.
He deserves every bullet fired at him, right?
Wow.
What's your thoughts?
That's a horrible way to say that, right? Because he is in the film, I think a lot of people will forget, and unfortunately for anyone who's never seen the film, I am about to spoil a significant bit about it, is that Rambo doesn't kill anyone in the first film. One person dies, but they die because of their own stupidity, not because Rambo kills them, right? He shows you, he's like, I have the ability to kill all of you, but I'm not going to. And he says, he makes a point of saying, don't push it. Yeah. He's like, don't test my patience. If I wanted you gone, you'd be gone. And that level of restraint, that's a testament to his training as a Green Beret. And that's a testament to how much he really is just a guy who just wants to get something to eat. In the book, it's very different. So like in the film, the sheriff doesn't let him get a meal. In the book, he gets the meal. In the book, you hear his own monologue, and he's an asshole, and he kills like everyone he can.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, like he kills like, I don't know, like 17 people in the book. And think of how long the film is, and think of how long he, like, we see him in the morning, and by that night, he's in the woods, and then by the following night, he's in the police station, and the finale is taking place. So he's basically there for 2 days.
Yeah.
The book is the same length of time.
All right, okay.
So think, he kills 17 people in two nights.
2 days.
That's slasher killer numbers, right? Michael Myers kills 5 people, right? Halloween 1, he kills 5 people, right? All of whom are, like, he kills 5 people, and I'm pretty sure all 5 of them are teenagers, right? Rambo kills, like, a whole police squad, countless soldiers.
There must be plenty, because, like, a sheriff's office only can have, like, 3.
So... yeah, he kills, like, there's, like, 5 people from the police station that he kills, and I think in total, including like the women, there's like 8 people who work in the station.
Okay.
And
all right. Well, it seems like they did the right thing by rewriting that for the film. Absolutely.
What's your thoughts, Neil, on Quentin Tarantino's What If? Because that was one thing he was circling, but decided not to. He wanted to do a remake of First Blood, but have it more heavily influenced on the novel. He said if he was to do it, the only person he sees as Rambo was Adam Driver, and he wanted to cast Kurt Russell as the cop, as the sheriff.
Which both of those decisions make sense, because they make sense in relation to, if you read the book, the descriptions of the characters. So if you read the book, Rambo is not Sylvester Stallone. Even young and fresh-faced as he is, that is not Rambo, right? The only thing they really kept was the scars, right? Rambo is kind of gangly a bit. I'm not saying that Adam Driver is gangly, but it's someone who is wiry. It's not... like, you look at Sylvester Stallone in Rambo, he looks like someone who clearly works out. Rambo is supposed to look like someone who is like, I've been starved and I've got zero body fat. This is just muscle and sinew, and it's like a coiled snake, basically. And yeah, like, if it was, the thing is, if they followed the book when they made the film, obviously there'd only be one of them. but it would have wound up being a really provocative, really kind of controversial film that would have easily been forgotten.
Interesting. Okay. I might have to check the book out. Sounds sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. So I'm going to do my next pick. I'm torn between two. They're two different comedies. But I'm going to go for the one that's probably not going to be picked because of I just love this movie. And I know a lot of people probably don't, and it's not as good as the first one. But I saw this one first, and I just fell in love with it. And it's Airplane 2, the sequel. I love the first Airplane, but Airplane 2, it's basically the same as the first movie. Yeah, it's basically the same as the first movie, but this time it's in a space shuttle. A faulty computer causes a passenger space shuttle to head straight for the sun. And comedy ensues. Robert Hayes, Julie Haggerty, Lloyd Bridges in this, and William Shatner are just gold. And yeah, it was just, yeah, it's just laugh after laugh, very much like the first movie, exactly the same tones. Some cast didn't come back, but it still holds up. And yeah, I would definitely, if you haven't seen Airplane or Airplane 2, the sequel, definitely check them out. So that made my list because it only made 25 million at the box office, not as much as this other comedy. But a lot of love for this film because, again, this is our list. It's our personal favorites. So that makes it. So, Sasha, you said it made your list as well, number 10, yeah?
Yeah, number 10. But I don't really remember much of it.
It's funny because it's not as quotable as the first one.
The first one I remember more. This one, the only thing I remember is when they're up in space and they meet Shatner. And that's about it, really. So I've seen it.
It's just magic,
and the only reason why it's on my list is because, I remembered liking it at the time.
All right, fair enough.
Maybe it shouldn't be on my list. Actually, you know what? I'm actually taking it off of my list.
I don't care because it's on our list.
I'm putting something else that I remember.
Okay, fine. Neil, have you seen Airplane 2? No. So Neil doesn't do airplane movies. He just doesn't do airplane films. Adrian feels about E.T., Neil feels about airplanes.
Well, yeah, I feel that way.
I think the slapstick comedy needs to come back, man. I think it does.
Yeah. Well, they're redoing the Naked Gun with Liam Neeson, right? So.
Yeah, that's correct.
How that turns out.
I would have really loved to seen back in 2007 or whenever Leslie Nielsen was alive. They wanted to do a reboot of something. It wasn't going to be a reboot, but it was called The Naked Gun. What for?
Right.
Yeah, but the whole idea was a new guy is coming in that's also called Frank Drebin. That's his replacement. And he's showing the new kid around. Yeah, that was the idea.
Okay.
Yeah, that was what for.
Interesting. All right.
The other thing was they were going to have...
I get it.
O.J. Simpson. Yeah. They were going to have O.J. Simpson in it while he was in jail. Playing O.J. Simpson.
Oh, shit.
Because he was disguised as Nordsberg, and they were going to bring back Nordsberg from the series to play Nordsberg.
Right, okay. Oh, bloody
hell. Yeah, that was the other thing. And I was like, wow, that's meta. And I don't know
I would love to see Terry Crews play Nordsberg in a remake. But anyway, okay, so Neil, what is your third and final pick?
See, now I'm very torn because I got I got three films that I need, and I need them in. And because you picked I'm
I threw a curveball, right?
You did. Because I was like, I got these films, and I was like, if I don't pick the one I'm leaning towards, it won't wind up in this list.
Well, we've got the final spot. So if Amrita, Alex, or Lee have picked it, it can still make it.
They haven't.
Oh, okay.
I know that virtually no one has chosen this film.
All right.
But I'm trying to justify to myself its inclusion against the other films. And because you threw that damn curveball with your damn airplane. you know what? No. Like, kill your baby. Sometimes you got to kill your babies.
Go with your heart, man. Go with your heart.
So my pick is going to be, and what's going to kill me is I know either both of you have this in your list somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picking Tron.
It was in my top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So seven. Tron. So yeah, I knew it had been Sasha's. So just shy of 27 million in the box office. Why Tron? Or what is Tron for people who don't know what it is?
Tron is the original Ready Player One, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the original guy goes into a game.
Yeah.
And I think people aren't really aware of how groundbreaking a film Tron was from a filmmaking point of view.
Mm-hmm.
The whole depiction of the computer world.
Yeah.
Right. And yes, I get if you put it up against even Tron Legacy's like more sleek and stylish, you know, light cycles and all of that, then it just looks like bollocks, because it's, you know, it's just like it's stuck in the 80s, you know, like they when they're doing the light cycles, and it's basically like friggin' like playing Snake, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have a Nokia phone and you didn't know about Snake, I pity you.
Right? It's iconic. It's been ripped in so many shows and referenced, like Family Guy and all sorts. Tron. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the Tron, it's groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I could sit down and watch Tron. I could sit down and watch Tron and Tron Legacy back to back.
Mm-hmm. Well, without Tron, you would never have Pixar.
Exactly.
That's facts.
Mm.
Tron is the film that gave birth to Pixar, basically. But I won't go into that in depth. Watch any documentary about the making and the formation of Pixar, and Tron is heavily mentioned. I think John Lasseter even worked on Tron on the light cycle sequence as well. But yeah, it's like one of the first uses of CGI in a film ever. The first ever being Return of the Jedi, when they have the Death Star hologram thing. Where they show the plans for the second Death Star. That's the first known CGI in a film. And then Tron came, that's a lie. Tron came before, because it was a year before Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, it did, so, like you say, it changed cinema. It was quite a landmark film. So, I mean, look, if you look at it now, you have to look at it with retro eyes, in a sense, you know, what it was at the time. It had all of the elements there, you know, Jeff Bridges on fine form, good cast, David Warner, Barnard Hughes. So, yeah, it was a good cast. Sashi says on number seven, yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, cool. So Tron makes the list. Now I'm happy that's made it. Sash, what is your final pick?
My number three was Blade Runner.
That's what I thought was you're going to be a number two.
Yeah, I thought so. But, you know, when I looked at, when I saw Blade Runner, I was like, well, that's my number one. All right. Then I saw Rocky III. I was like, ooh, I don't know now. And then I saw First Blood. I was like, First Blood was the same year? Shit. And then it was a juggling act, and this would have been number one for forever. But, you know, when it comes to what I've rewatched the most, Rocky III and First Blood I've seen more times than Blade Runner. Blade Runner's like a film which is technically amazing and would be up my number one list kind of thing. But it's how I feel about, a lot of people don't feel the same way as I do about this other film, but the best Christopher Nolan film, in my opinion, is Inception. I love that film.
Agreed.
And I could watch that over and over. However, with Inception, I need to dedicate 2 hours to watch Inception. Like, not like watch it and have a conversation. I need to switch my phone off, throw it away, and watch it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
You can't walk midway through. And that's how I feel about Blade Runner. Blade Runner is fucking amazing. It's, I know people on this panel do not feel the same way I do, but that ending.
I don't like it.
I fucking love Blade Runner.
I don't know if it's because I didn't see it back in the day, but Sasha brought around the, which cut was it? Was it the director's cut?
It was the final cut.
So Sasha brought it around to watch because he's like, you haven't seen Blade Runner. You know, what are you doing with your life? We need to sit down and watch this. And I watched it and I appreciated it for what it was, but it just didn't resonate with me. Now, to be fair, I haven't gone back and rewatched it again, which I probably need to do because sometimes you just don't like a film depending on the mood you're in at the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And maybe because I felt like I'm having to watch this film, it's like, maybe it's a chore. Maybe if I take the chance to watch it again, I'll feel different. And I probably, that's one of the reasons I haven't actually watched Blade Runner 2049, I think it is, because I didn't appreciate the first one, so I wasn't bothered about the second one, but I always thought I'll go back and watch the first one again before I watch the second. So yeah, it just doesn't do it for me. I know it's probably on most people's top tens, but yeah, it just didn't hit home for me.
You see, now it's interesting you say that, because I didn't watch Blade Runner until somewhere between 2010 and like 2015.
Okay. Oh, wow.
I probably watched it a little bit later, before the pandemic, a couple of years before the pandemic, probably.
Yeah, but, between 2010 and 2015 is the first time I watched it. I managed to, I bought a special edition that was like every cut.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
But I bought it as a DVD, right? It was.
Yeah, I got that one.
Yeah. That DVD, and it's like it comes in the metal tin.
Yeah.
That. I bought that. And I was like, I'm staring at it right now. Yeah. I was like, you see, you know what the funny thing is? You say that, but when you point, you're pointing down a corridor in the Death Star.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, like I'd never seen it, and I watched it, but I watched it by myself alone, no distractions. I just sat there and watched it, and I was like, damn, I can understand why people really like this film.
Yeah. No, I get it. I do get it. I understand. So, okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, can you see it?
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's all the different versions.
It's got about five different versions. It's got...
Yeah. The film cell.
Yeah, film physical cell. Media people, invest.
It's physical media, man. Let's get physical.
I think that's the first time Sasha's sung on the podcast. Okay.
You know what? I might just watch this now.
He's like, yeah, I'll put this on now after this podcast.
But yeah, no. What's I gonna say? Has my background changed back? It has.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Blade Runner. One of my faves. I think the other thing was I must have saw it in 93 whenever the director's cut came out to buy on VHS. That's when I saw it. I saw it on VHS. Watched it loads of times back then. It's like one of the movies I used to watch a lot as a kid because sci-fi there wasn't that much around as there is now. More importantly, there was a Blade Runner video game by West Pear Studios? I can't remember who made it, but I know EA owned the license for that game now. But it recently came out on PS4 and PS5 remaster of the game. And the game was groundbreaking because if you're into point-and-click graphic adventures, which I was, stuff like Secret of Monkey Island and Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, it was the first point-and-click where you could fire the gun at people. You got into gun shootouts as well as like solving puzzles and stuff. But what I loved about it was they got as many of the original cast back to play their characters. You played a different Blade Runner, not Deckard. You played somebody else entirely. It had like several different endings, kind of thing. And it was probably one of the first games. Eventually, like the film. But no, but it's really cool because you'd actually go to actual places from the film. Like you met the same police officer, like his boss, the captain that gives him the job, etc. You actually meet the same actor and he's talking to you and stuff. And you meet Tyrell as well, and all sorts. But it was a really good game, man. And I did download that for PS4 and I never finished it. I think I might have to re-download that, but I say that with everything. So really good game. If you haven't got on PS4, check it out if you're into point and click adventures. Which is a very underrated genre, in my opinion, because it's actually my favorite genre in video games. But yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So that makes up our top nine. So just to recap, we have E.T., the Extraterrestrial. We have Rocky 3, First Blood, Conan the Barbarian, The Thing, Tron, Airplane 2, Poltergeist, and Blade Runner. So we've got one more spot. So I'm just going to shout out the lists. Of those in the group in the chat to mention a few things. There's probably a few here on the list which I'd like to mention as well, see if we wanted something we want to pick. But Amrita, so she's had E.T., Blade Runner, Sophie's Choice. it's a cracking drama. It won Meryl Streep. She won the Oscar for that. So you know, highly critical film. Did well. Then she had The Thing, Gandhi. Okay. None of us have mentioned that. That swept the Oscars that year. Best film, best director, Richard Attenborough. I don't believe I've seen it, honorable mentions. Officer and a Gentleman, she had. So this is a romantic drama with Richard Gere and Deborah Winger. Did really well at the box office, 129 million worldwide. And is actually something that is referenced quite a lot in media. It's referenced in the Sims. So there's basically a scene at the end where, spoilers, the leading couple get together. He comes in a naval suit, dressed up. He scoops the woman off her feet. She's working in a factory, and she puts his navy cap on, and they walk out into the sunset, kind of thing. And that's referenced in The Simpsons, in one of their earlier episodes, and in Friends, obviously, with Ross and Rachel, where Ross comes in with a suit, picks up Rachel. But he's bashing her head and everything, and he just like leaves. Yeah, you're funny. it's referenced a lot in movies. She had Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I've not actually seen this movie.
I have
very, very popular. Yeah. So Phoebe K, Jennifer Jason Lee, Sean Penn, Judge Reinhold, Forest Whitaker, Eric Stoltz, and a very young Nicolas Cage, although he's named Nicholas or Nick Coppola in this.
Yeah.
He's basically a group of Southern California high school students enjoying their most important subject, sex, drug, and rock and roll in their final year of high school. It's a film which turned many a boys into men. So
Phoebe Cates. I'm sorry, man. She changed a lot of childhoods, boy. She ended a lot of childhoods, I'm going to say.
Then she had Tron, Poltergeist as well, and Tootsie. Tootsie, that is Dustin Hoffman, right?
Yep, Dustin Hoffman.
Just Dustin Hoffman dressed up in drag as a woman. Not as drag, but he's dressed up as a woman to be a presenter? I haven't seen that movie in ages. Is that a TV presenter or something like that? The only way he could get the job was dressing up or something like that to get some recognition. I know that was bumped around at the Oscars as well. We'll go into that. I'm going to go into Alex's list. He had Blade Runner, First Blood, Conan the Barbarian, E.T., The Thing, Rocky 3, Tron, Poltergeist. Yo, he's got like every film so far. He had Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Khan.
I had that on my list.
And I appreciate for any Trekkies out there, you'd be probably screaming at us saying, how is this not on the list? I'm not really Trekkie.
I think we should put time, it. I think that should be number 10.
It might be.
I'm leaning towards agreeing. We'll just in my
and
list.
And then he also had Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Honorable mentions, The Beastmaster, 48 Hours. 48 Hours is one I was considering.
That's one on my list. That's the other one
yeah,
on my
Nick
list.
Nolte, Eddie Murphy, buddy movie, like Gruntled Cop, Wisecracking Criminal. And he had The Dark Crystal, and he also had Tootsie. We'll just go on to Lee.
Yeah, Dark Crystal and 48 Hours.
So Lee, he had E.T. Spielberg himself says he rewatches that movie and wouldn't change a thing. Well-casted Harry Thomas and Drew Barrymore. As kid actors were incredible. The Thing, brilliant story, brilliant set, atmosphere, great cast, Trust Nobody, Kurt Russell, awesome. Blade Runner, again, what a year for sci-fi. Harrison Ford, well cast, great story, great sets, atmosphere, what most of today's technology is based on. Rambo, First Blood, enough said, what am I going to do with these rats? And then they called First Blood, not me. Rocky III, great addition to the franchise. Conan, if there was no Conan, would we have Arnie? Probably, I guess, but again, perfect casting for the role. Poltergeist made me think twice about sitting close to the TV, especially if it was displaying static, and also made me check the foundations of my house. One of the first encounters of sci-fi horror. I believe the little girl passed away in real life at a young age.
Yeah, she did.
Wow, okay. Haunting. Eight, Star Trek, Wrath of Khan, one of the best-known Star Trek films to date. He also had Tron. Not seen it for ages, but the story and visual effects were ahead of its time. 48 Hours, classic Eddie Murphy humor with Nick Nolte being Nick Nolte. Great fun. And then, here's number 11. Shout out to Airplane, to not as good as the first one, but still has some good laughs in there. So, Sasha, run me through your top 10 list so we can see what's missing.
Okay, number one, Rocky III, First Blood, Blade Runner, Conan the Barbarian, The Thing. Number six is E.T. Number seven is Tron. Number eight is 48 Hours. Number nine is Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Number 10 is The King of Comedy. Honorable so mentions. Yeah. Honorable mentions are Gandhi, Firefox, Airplane 2, The Dark Crystal, and The Toy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Okay. Neil, run us through your list.
Mine, okay, so it's Conan the Barbarian, The Thing, Blade Runner, Rocky III, Tron, First Blood, 48 Hours, Poltergeist, E.T., Wrath of Khan.
Right, okay. So there's kind of two that are coming up a lot, and we'll have to decide what's it going to be. I think it's probably 48 Hours or Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan. I think it's going to be one of those two.
Of the two of them, I would say, even though it's like the last film in my list, I would say Wrath of Khan, because with 48 Hours, that's more out of like, oh, it's my love of Eddie Murphy, and it's him just before he becomes Eddie Murphy to the world. Like at that moment when he makes 48 Hours, he's Eddie Murphy to America.
Yeah.
Right? Beverly Hills Cop comes out, he's Eddie Murphy to the entire world. And I'm like, yeah, that movie. And it's just like, but when I really think about it, I think I get more laughs out of another 48 hours. So I can, I'm content with losing 48 hours. Wrath of Khan, on the other hand, that is literally the most iconic Star Trek film there is.
You know?
Yeah. And when you think about it, it's sort of like of TV shows that were really popular that became movies, like, oh, we continue the story in a movie. I'm pretty sure I could be wrong. And if I am wrong, then hold my hands up and apologize. But I'm pretty sure that Wrath of Khan was the first time they took like a specific one-note villain. Khan is in one episode of Star Trek. He's a one-note villain. And they made a whole movie about him getting revenge against the main character of the film. And he does it cold as hell. Khan is easily one of the greatest villains in sci-fi history.
Okay. Sasha, any arguments?
So, I've read out my list. Unfortunately, Wrath of Khan is not on there. And it's not because I don't not like the movie. It's just I never grew up on it. I never really watched it. I've seen it the one time. I do think it's a very, very good Star Trek movie. And I know how beloved it is to Star Trek fans. However, my list is definitive over my own tastes. And I was more a Star Wars guy than a Star Trek guy. Richard Edwards, you're going to kill me, but I'm talking to you as you're listening. I'm not putting Star Trek to the Wrath of Khan on my list. So, but I can be outvoted because I can see Ken
so
doing
what
it.
Film would you, be, so what film would you put true, in that number last spot?
I've got to be true. I got to be true to myself. And you, to be honest, I've seen 48 Hours a hell of a lot at times. And I do love that film. And for all the reasons that Neil just said, it is pre-Eddie. You know, it's like Eddie Murphy before Eddie Murphy. It's like if you knew, you know what I mean? And I get it. See, for me, it's probably that, man. It's probably that.
I gotta say, for those who don't know, for those who have no real like frame of reference for what we're talking about. Watching 48 Hours is the equivalent of watching Michael Jordan play like his final college basketball game. He is going to rule when he steps onto an NBA court.
You know what? I kind of wish that I had Richard on this podcast because he'd be here fighting tooth and nail for Wrath of Khan. but no, I've got to be true to myself and I've got to be true to my list, unfortunately. That's the only reason why. I'm sorry, Trekkies, people that still watch that.
I have to agree with Sasha because it wasn't on my list. Sasha had 48 hours. Neil, you had it as well, right?
If I had both of them, I'd be disingenuous, man.
I'd be disingenuous. Mm-hmm. And that's not what my list is about. I'm not about popular opinions. Mm-hmm. It's my list kind of thing.
I can give it an honorable mention,
but I don't think to put it in my honorable mentions. You know, I might just do that now, like honorable mention, because it is a great film. It is a great film. Would I? But here's the thing: when I look at my list, do I think it's better than The King of Comedy, a Martin Scorsese film that was basically the foundations of the Joker movie? No, I don't. Have I seen it as much and got as much laughter from it from Fast Times at Ridgemont High? A film that I have often revisited at least like once a year, you know, love that movie. 48 Hours. I haven't seen it in a few years, but I own it on VHS and that VHS got rinsed. Same with
Tron. I've never actually watched King of Comedy. It's not one of them.
Really? That's one for me anyway, because I'm a Scorsese fan. You know, and you know, the other ones that mentioned Tron, E.T., The Thing, Conan the Barbarian. You know what? If I was to remove something, and this is also going to be controversial, okay? It's probably going to be E.T. Because E.T. is a cultural icon of a movie, and it's one of Steven Spielberg's best. But growing up, like I said, I had two VHSs at one point in my whole life, and E.T. wasn't the one I rewatched. It was Knight Rider.
I did point out that I probably haven't seen E.T. in at least 20 years.
But it's also not the how many times you watch the movie. Yes, that definitely influences my choice. Yeah. It's the impact of the movie, the quality of the movie. So yeah, I take all that into consideration. I've seen Wrath of Khan once. That's
it. Same. I've seen it once. I've seen E.T. a bunch of times though, maybe four or five times in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Okay, so Wrath of Khan is out, 48 hours is in. So that makes
Are we being a bit too are we being a bit too
going on majority? We majority, all had it in our list.
Majority says.
Yeah. But we all had it in our list. Lee had it in his list. So it's just it's a numbers game. Not enough people had Wrath of Khan. So
I just want to take this moment. If you guys say nothing for a second, I just want to take this moment.
Hackers, don't kill us.
And as we've said that Wrath of Khan did not make the cut, I just want to take this moment to go.
Cancelled. You're gonna get this show cancelled, bro. I'm supposed to be gaining subscribers, not losing them.
I couldn't resist. I'm sorry. I was listening to everything that being said about Bill Kevin, and I was just like looking up, and I could just see the handle of my lightsaber just sitting there, and I was like, can I resist? No.
A couple of other honorable mentions for me. The World According to Garp, Robin Williams, Glenn Close, John Lithgow. Also, Death Trap, starring Michael Caine and Christopher Reeve. If you haven't heard of Death Trap, it's an American black comedy suspense film based on a novel of the same name. I won't go into spoilers. I think it's definitely worth a film, definitely going to watch it. But a little bit of education piece. If you don't know what a black comedy means, it's a film or a play or something that's being presented that deals with a tragic or distressing subject matter in a humorous way. So it's got nothing to do with the cast or the race of people in it. Okay. Just I don't want to get cancelled. I've seen what's happened with Matt Rife. I need to make sure I'm very clear about what I'm saying and what I mean.
Who's Matt Rife and what the hell happened to him?
He's a comedian.
So Matt Rife is a comedian. He exploded on TikTok. He's done his special on Netflix. It's not great. He goes into some subjects which probably isn't the best. Majority of his audience and his popularity came from women in his audience, and even in this show it's like predominantly women. He's a good looking chap, but he very went on the offensive to women on this one, potentially looking like this show is for men, and he's come out and said this show was for the guys, not for the girls. And I think he's made some poor decisions, but his writing was okay for me. A lot of people said they turned off within 15 minutes. I watched the whole thing, so judgment myself. The last 15 minutes are probably the best bit, and but I think his crowd work is what I fell in love with originally. But yeah, it's controversial. My every other video on TikTok is about him and people having their opinion on it at the moment. But hey, the guy, and then the backlash. So where people made some comments about that. And he said, here's my apology to those comments. And it was a link to a special needs website where you can buy helmets for the special needs. So that was that was his response. I was like, fair play, bro. Okay, you do you.
You know what? Wow. I'm sorry. I like the fact he got the balls to do that.
He has. He absolutely has. But yeah. Right. Well, thank you very much for joining, gentlemen. One thing I just want to touch on before I go, because I hadn't done this in previous episodes, I thought, why not? So I just want to touch a little bit about the Oscars, which would have been roughly for like the films released in 82. There might be some crossover because of where the Oscars are kind of released. Yeah. But in the leading role category, Ben Kingsley won for Gandhi. We also had Dustin Hoffman for Tootsie, Jack Lemmon for Missing, Paul Newman for The Verdict, Peter O'Toole for My Favorite Year, all films I haven't seen, so I need to add them to my list. In terms of cinematography, again, Gandhi won. Costume design, Gandhi won. Directing, again, Richard Attenborough for Gandhi won. We also had Wolfgang Petersen for Das Boot, Spielberg for E.T., Sidney Pollack for Tootsie, and Sidney Lumet for The Verdict. Film editing, Gandhi kind of swept the awards that year. Music was E.T., that won. And Best Picture, the nominees were Gandhi, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Missing, Tootsie and The Verdict, and obviously Gandhi won. So there we go. So yeah, a little bit on the Oscars that year, but I'm gonna have to check the years that some of those other ones were released, because they might have been early 83, so I don't know. But anyway, thanks for sticking with us. Let us know what you thought of our top 10. So we're just going to run through that list one more time. No particular order, because I think that'll be a little bit unfair. But we've got E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Rocky 3, First Blood, Conan the Barbarian, The Thing, Tron, Airplane 2, Poltergeist, Blade Runner, and 48 Hours. That's our list. Sound off in the comments. What did we miss? Are you upset with Neil and his references? Are you upset that we didn't mention Porky's? Let us know in the comments. As always, please make sure you hit that like and subscribe. Make sure you share it to your friends via WhatsApp, Facebook, any social media platform that you like. Gentlemen, anything you'd like to say before we go?
May the force be with you.
Well said. May the force be with you always. Peace out.
Live long and prosper on a different podcast.